I'm going to talk about a study that we've recently, well not recently, but had funded and recently finished data collection on just about the time abstracts were due. And so I'm going to talk about some very preliminary analysis, but also some things we've been doing more recently, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to start by asking, who has heard of ecological momentary assessment? Who knows what this is? Okay, that's helpful for me to know what I need to do. So the role of impairment in the experience of environmental problems, an ecological momentary assessment of the environmental problems people encounter in their daily lives. I don't have much to disclose. No relationships. My study questions are, how does impairment affect people's experience of environmental problems? A little overstated because I didn't really vary impairment and then look at its effects. So really I have to go back to, how is impairment related to the experience that people have with environmental problems? And secondly, do time-lagged effects of the environment predict later participation constraints? I wish I could answer that. I can't quite, but I'm going to talk to you about and update you kind of on where we are in trying to answer that kind of question. So to begin with, let me tell you how we found our participants for this study. We began by randomly selecting 10,000 households out of 5 zip codes in Missoula, Montana, where I live, because we needed to have direct contact with the people that we were going to work with. That should represent 22,000 people, according to census, in Montana, in Missoula. And we sent them a letter and a postcard, and the postcard was pre-coded to their name and address, and it said, if you can answer yes to any of the ACS disability screener questions, you'd be willing to complete a survey, drop this postcard in the mail. So the disability screener questions that we use are from the American Community Survey, and they include, are you deaf or have serious difficulty hearing? Are you blind or do you have serious difficulty seeing even when wearing glasses? Because of a physical, mental, or emotional condition, do you have serious difficulty concentrating, remembering, or making decisions? Do you have serious difficulty walking or climbing stairs? Do you have difficulty dressing or bathing? Because of a physical, mental, or emotional condition, do you have difficulty doing errands alone? So to those people who returned a postcard, and we got about 600 postcards back, and if you start to do the back math on this, we just selected households at random. And so in Missoula, which is a college town, we have about 13.5% of people that according to census, should answer yes to these questions. So if we work our way back, we got about 600 postcards back, which was about 20% of the eligible sample that returned a postcard. And from those people, we collected 525 surveys. These were from ages 18 to 75. I'm going to report on the group 18 to 65 today. And the last question on this longitudinal survey, which had questions about participation and impairment and pain, the last question was, would you be willing to participate in another study on participation? And so this is how we selected our ecological momentary assessment sample. So we got 116 people, and for those people 18 to 65, we had about 300 surveys. So we got a little over 30% of the folks who completed a survey to do the EMA. And they were on average 52.8 years old, 64% female, 97% white. It's in Missoula, Montana. About half were married, 23% or so had a high school or GED, 34.5% had some college, 23% had a bachelor's degree, about 9% had a master's, 26% lived alone, 50% had incomes between $20,000 and $30,000, 19% had incomes greater than $50,000, 60% were not employed, 14% were employed part-time, 27% full-time, and 44.3% indicated they had Social Security of some kind. Now, when we look at the census demographics for our town, these compare quite favorably. And so our method of going out and trying to randomly select households and then to collect from them, we've got a group that looks fairly similar to the demographic for where we are. So here's how they break down in terms of impairment. 19 people indicated that they were deaf or had serious difficulty hearing. 10 were blind. 50 indicated they had difficulty remembering or concentrating. 82 individuals had difficulty walking. About 40 had difficulty dressing or bathing. 47 difficulty doing errands. And then I added individuals who indicated that their average pain was greater than 4 as another group to look at pain as an impairment. And you could have that could overlay other kinds of impairments. But this particular study, we're interested in what's going on with pain. The top two, deaf and blind, I've got in red. Keep in mind that anything that I report on that group is going to be significantly underpowered because we just don't have enough people in those two groups. So what is this EMA? Well, we start by getting the folks who agree to come and do this to come and do a 90-minute training session with us where we go through how to enter responses on a Samsung Galaxy. And these were players, not cellular phones. So it's like an iPod. And I'll show you some screenshots of this in a minute. But it goes through and asks them a number of different questions, and it does this randomly in two-hour intervals between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. It prompts them to complete a survey, which has about 20, 22 questions. It also, and I'm not presenting on this, but we use the Samsung Galaxy because it, at that time, had a GPS receiver in it, whereas the iPod did not. So we had the GPS receiver turned on, and we asked people their permission to turn this on, and we told them we're not going to be looking at anything in real time. We're just going to look at this retrospectively to just see what, you know, how far people were traveling and things like that. We had one person that indicated they wouldn't allow us to turn on the GPS receiver for the device. So with the consent, we kept that running. And then for people who completed all surveys, they would have answered those 22 questions 84 times over a 14 consecutive day period. So some of the EMA questions included, where are you? And they're going to choose from a number of different locations that indicate where they are, from home to an office building to a healthcare facility, etc. Who is with you is another question. Are you alone? Are you with a spouse? Are you with family? Are you with a friend? Rate your level of physical exertion. And this is an exertion scale that comes out of the exercise phys literature where they've taken words like no exertion at all to very, very lightly, to moderately, to very, very extremely hard. They use those kinds of words, and they actually get a nice correlation between how people respond to that exertion scale and what their heart rate is. And we also asked them on a 10-point pain scale, what is your pain right now? 0 to 10. That says 1 to 10, but it was 0. And then we asked them, which of these environmental features bothered you since the last time you responded to a survey? So what we want to know is get a checklist of all of these things that were a problem for people. And we didn't phrase this in terms of barriers. We phrased it in terms of problems because we thought if we ask them about problems, we can empirically define what a barrier is. A barrier is a problem that alters your behavior in some way. So if we can see that people are changing what they're doing on the basis of the environment, we can define that in some ways as a barrier. So that's what we decided to do. They can check off none. They can indicate accessibility, like lack of curb cuts or ramps or signs, allergens like pollen or animals, air quality or smells like smoke or pollution or perfumes, climate or weather like outside temperature, rain, snow, wind, seasonal variations. We get some of that in Montana occasionally. Crowds, too many people, too much activity. Darkness, like low light or lack of contrast. Lights, like overly bright lights, flashing lights. Noisy or loud, background noise. People's attitudes, negative attitudes, attitudes of friends, family, service providers, strangers. Room temperature, like indoor temperature, too hot or too cold. Traffic or parking, such as traffic congestion, lack of an accessible parking spot. And transportation problems. And so we do the 90-minute training because we need people to understand what we mean by these things, because on a Samsung Galaxy, we don't have all of these prompts. So we go through this with them, and we give them a guide that helps them to understand and look back at what is allergens, what does that mean? So here's a screenshot of the Samsung Galaxy. And on the left-hand side are radio buttons, where are you? Scroll and choose. So they learn in the training that they can use their finger to scroll on a rolling list, and they can choose one because you can only be in one place at a time. At least that's our operating theory right now. If this were environmental conditions, these would be check boxes, and they could check all that apply. So please tell us all of the environmental conditions that bothered you since the last time you answered a survey. The other side shows how we asked about pain. How much pain are you experiencing right now? And this is a slider. So you can tap on this to indicate what your pain level is, and that number will change. Right now it's at a 2. If you tap higher up, it could go to a 7 or 8, or you can drag it. And you can put your finger on it and drag it and watch that number go up to what your pain is. And so, at every time period, we're asking them about where they are, what their pain is, environmental conditions, and things like this. So here's a histogram of the percentage of time periods across all of these 116 people, and the count of how many people were indicating that they had a percentage, the percentage of time that they had no problems. So if you look on the right-hand side, we've got some people that 100% of the time they're indicating no problems. I just, there's not too much in my environment that bothers me. On the left-hand side is another group of people who are constantly bothered by their environment. And then you have this kind of flat distribution in between. Nothing like a normal distribution. Not quite sure what's going on with this, but it's quite interesting to consider how people and what the range is in how people experience their environment when you ask them about it as they're going through their daily life for 14 days. Okay, now to make sure you're awake, I'm going to switch this on you. Because now I want to show you the median percentage of periods with problems. This is the opposite. But now I want to show you what it looks like for the different impairment groups. So deaf and blind, deaf looks like it's a pretty significant difference. But again, these are pretty unstable means with this small number of people in these groups. So don't pay too much attention to those. Remembering is the only significant difference in the median percentage of times that people indicate that they have problems, where people who say they have difficulty remembering indicate that they have some problems 50% of the time that they responded. And people without memory problems are down closer to 15%. Big, big difference. Across these other groups, no significant differences. Walking, dressing, bathing, errands, or pain greater than 4, none of these are statistically significant differences, and this is using a non-parametric test because of the distribution that we just saw. So, remembering, that's where the big difference is. So this table now breaks this out even further. And I've got on the left-hand side of the table the environmental issues, the problems, and across the top I've got the different impairment groups that we've just looked at, and I added to the right-hand side whether or not people used equipment as another kind of indicator of potential mobility problems, although equipment could go beyond that. And so across the top, in the salmon-colored cells, I've put in, those are the statistically significant, and I put in a GT if it's greater than. So in the first one there, that's the result we just saw, where those people who indicated they had difficulty remembering had greater number of periods with problems. That's that top row. That's the only difference that we saw. I colored red the cells that we would expect to find on the basis of impairment, problems that people would have with their environment. So if we look at deaf and blind, and I've noted here again, we've got low statistical power, but we would think that people that had low vision would have significantly more problems with darkness or lights. And even with the blind group, which is very small, it's not showing up here. Likewise, for the people who are deaf, and we had 20 people in that group, right, we would expect noise to be more of a problem. It doesn't show up. Okay, but those we'll leave alone because they're underpowered. What about people who have a mobility or walking impairment? What's going on there? Because we would expect more difficulties with access, potentially transportation. These are things that we think about in terms of mobility impairment, and in fact, for that group, we find no statistically significant differences at all. Then if we follow across the access, the second row of the table, we do find that people who have dressing or bathing difficulties, or difficulty doing errands, or those who use equipment are indicating greater access problems. So that makes sense. We would expect those folks potentially. I think about the difficulty dressing or bathing as kind of an indicator of disability severity. That is, you can have serious difficulty walking or climbing stairs, but if you also then have difficulty dressing or bathing, we're probably talking about somebody with a more significant kind of disability. So overall with this table, there's some things that we would expect to see that we don't see if we think about the environment being kind of this experience based on my impairment. But the real interesting thing to me is the remembering, the difficulty remembering. What is up with that? And I would pose that what people do, and we thought about this a lot as we were putting the study together, people don't go to places that are environmentally unfriendly. We avoid them. So in my town, North Reserve is where Walmart and all of the big box stores are, and you avoid North Reserve in December and between 3 and 5. You don't go there, because the traffic is terrible for us, right? And so you know the places that you avoid environmentally. But what if I forget? What if I don't learn that Reserve is a problem? What if I don't learn and I don't remember very well what's going on with things in my environment, then I'm more likely to repeat and go back into environments. And so this might be simply the role of learning and the difficulty that people that have memory problems have with learning and adapting to their environment. The other thing I want to point out is that we think about, at least before I started using these questions in community-based research, I would think about remembering as kind of the cognitive question, looking for, you know, the cognitive disability, the traumatic brain injury or the developmental disability kind of things. It really overlaps tremendously with depression. And so when you find depression, you find more memory and concentration difficulties, one of the hallmarks of depression. So I would suggest that one of the things that may be going on here is that when people are answering, yes, I'm having difficulty remembering, in part this is related to a depression, and that then they're doing less well in terms of learning and navigating through their environment in ways that help them to avoid environmental problems. So, next steps. Where are we headed with this? Well, the real value of this kind of data is not just in being able to collect things like environmental conditions and what people's experiences are. It's great for that because we're finding out, you know, this is a two-hour retrospective that we're asking on environment. But now we can also look at sequences of behaviors and effects over time, at least in things that we would expect to vary within 14 days. And so one of the things we've been really interested in is, excuse me. What is the role of pain in people's daily experience? Is there a role that pain has on how much people participate? So this is next steps because these are analyses that we're doing right now, trying to unpack some of these sequential effects. Over on the right-hand side is being at home. And the arrow, the black arrow, is time. So if I'm at home, we're wondering, are there things beforehand that would predict my being at home later? It's binary. It's a logistic regression. I'm either at home or I'm not at home. And so what we found is that if you look at pain lag 8 or 6 hours before you're at home, for each unit increase in your rating of pain, there's a 10% increase in the likelihood that you'll be at home 8 or 6 hours later on. Now what's interesting about that is that the within subject average standard deviation in this sample on pain is 1 unit. So 67% of people's pain ratings are plus or minus 1 of their average, and their average for this whole sample is around 4.5 or 5. So if they go from pain as a 5 to pain as a 6, there's a 10% increase in the likelihood that 6, 8 hours later, they're going to be at home. The exertion scale does the same thing, and independently, to a certain extent. That is, we can put pain in the equation, and then we can put exertion in, and we find basically the same kind of results, that if I exert myself either 4, 6, or 8 hours before, there's a 5% increase in the likelihood for each unit increase in exertion that I will go home 4, 6, or 8 hours later on. And this is controlling for, in these equations, we're controlling for age, gender, race, education, employment, equipment use, time of day, weekday versus weekend, the number of impairments that people have, and their pain intensity. Cross-sectionally at the time that they're at home. So these are pretty robust findings that are about predicting whether or not people go home. Now, what if we change this up a little bit, though? Because in terms of participation, what we'd like to know is, okay, you can go home and do lots of different things. With this kind of data, we can look at those times when people go home to rest. Specifically, I'm at home. What's my activity? I'm resting or I'm doing something restful, like watching TV or I'm on the computer. Now, what we see is that 6 hours beforehand, a 1 unit increase in exertion predicts a 7% increase in the likelihood of being home 6 hours later. Pain now is at 2 hours. So the time period before, if there's a 1 unit increase in my pain, the time period before, there's a 7.5% increase in the likelihood that I am now at home resting. And in fact, these two are linked, as we might expect. So from the pain literature, we know that if people exert themselves a lot, they're likely to have more pain. And now we have some evidence that in fact, then they're probably going to go home. So if we're interested in participation and participation restrictions or what affects people's participation, pain is one that we need to be looking at. Because if my pain goes from a 5 to a 7 or an 8, I'm looking at a 20 to 30% increase in the likelihood that I'm going to be home. At some point in the next little bit of time. That's a pretty significant impact on participation. So then for this presentation, and where we haven't gotten to yet, because this notion of environmental conditions is pretty complex, and we've got quite a bit of work to do yet, but we think about the environment and access problems as limiting what people can do just on the physical basis of there's a ramp or there's not a ramp, right? And so I can get in or I cannot get in. And that's a very clear pathway of how the environment affects participation. But another way that the environment might affect participation is in its relationship to exertion and pain. So if I'm in environments that require me to exert more, it very much it's likely that that will lead to an increase in my tendency to go home and also to increase my pain. And so what we want to explore then is this interaction between exertion in the environment, its effect on pain, and its direct effect on going home. And it's a pathway that we don't always think about, but I think it's a very real one. And if we look at the places where people go, we find very interesting things that make sense to us. Walmart creates pain. All big box stores do. If you look at where they've rated having pain, it's in big box stores, and it's when they go outside, actually, for whatever reason. So if they rate that they're outdoors or they're in a big box store, we know that their pain is higher. So just for your consideration, because these are very exploratory kinds of things, we're just starting to scratch the surface of this. There's a lot of variability in people's tendency to notice problems in the environment, and one of the really interesting analyses that we came up with was that it's related to some psychological variables. So we collected on a construct called pain catastrophizing. And pain catastrophizing is highly related to the number of environmental conditions people checked off as they were going through their daily lives. So there's this tendency to catastrophize, pain is ruining my life, there's a tendency to be sensitive to the environment and its impact in some way that I can't exactly understand but we're starting to look at some of that. People may adapt their spatial travel patterns to minimize encountering problematic barriers. That we can probably start to detect some of that. If so, then environments create behavioral patterns that limit participation, and this is the social problem of the inaccessible and problematic environments, right? It's because I learn where I can't go, and then I don't go there anymore because it's not friendly to me in some way. And that's where we need our advocates and we need to have the more accessible places. But it might also be that the environment has this effect and this interaction with exertion that has another pathway for limiting participation. And so I think that one of the things we need to be considering beyond just physical accessibility is this notion of what's its effect on the exertion level of people that are already perhaps struggling to get through their environment. And the pain is the one that we tend not to look at. Even in rehab, it doesn't tend to get the attention that it probably deserves if we're going to look at participation as an outcome. Thank you very much.